just for the sake of campaigning, do you think?
First off, if Biden gets elected, it will change. And it may not change exactly the way Biden is representing. Biden is still trying to act like a moderate in this regard. But the progressives under Bernie Sanders and others are pushing very hard for health care for all. And so I think the first push is going to be to turn around and arrange for Medicare to come down to $60 to $50 and try to absorb the volumes of people that way. And at the same time, going out and making sure that what's left of Obamacare is covering the 20 million people that aren't covered. So there's no question in my mind that a Democratic leadership will attempt and succeed in covering everybody's health care needs in the foreseeable future.
Okay, I'm going to thank Mike Revel there. We appreciate it, Mike. He's the former U.S. presidential candidate and U.S. senator. Well, let's go back in time here and look at 4 years ago. President Trump rode a hard line on immigration to the Republican nomination and ultimately the White House. And when the topic came up on Thursday night's debate, however, he tried to downplay some of the more extreme steps that he has taken while in office.
When asked about his administration's policy of separating the children from the parents of undocumented migrants, Trump tried to turn the conversation to the detention facilities created by the Obama administration to house unaccompanied minor immigrants. Biden was quick to respond. He noted that the children Trump was detaining came over with their parents and that the policy was making the U.S. a laughingstock.
Another question to you.
These 500-plus kids came with parents. They separated them at the border to make it a disincentive to come to begin with. Big, real tough, we're really strong. And guess what? They cannot, it's not coyotes didn't bring them over, their parents were with them. They got separated from their parents. And it makes us a laughing stock and violates every notion of who we are as a nation.
The two sides then clashed over race, with Trump once again insisting that he is the least racist president America has ever had.
I am the least racist person in this room.
In the first presidential debate, Trump talked himself into trouble when the topic turned to race relations, as he danced around whether to directly condemn white supremacist groups. This time around, the president was considerably more quick. He boasted about his bipartisan criminal justice reform and funding for historically black colleges. But still, figures show that many American voters see him as a racist person.
I was just appalled by how he was trying to paint this picture of suburban women falling into his camp and being as racist as he is. We ask all of our members to send it. It's basically a letter from management telling him he's fired and that he does not have the vote of suburban women, that he does not know what we want or what we're looking for or how we feel. He doesn't speak for us.
Okay, let's bring in our next guest on the show. Another senator, I promise you, former member of the Virginia State Senate, Richard Hayden Black, joins us. Richard, welcome. Let's take a look at the U.S. president calling the undocumented immigrants people with the lowest IQ. He also avoided to talk about white supremacy and instead attacked the Black Lives Matter protesters. What kind of message do you think he wants to send Americans? I mean, what kind of Americans will people see as the president for the next 4 years? If he's going to be the one that they're going to elect?
The Black Lives Matter is not simply a race-based group. About 70% of them are white, and they are a Marxist group. They're a revolutionary group, and they really are seeking an overthrow of the government.
Interesting that you say that. BLM, or Black Lives Matter, is a group that was created mainly due to police brutality against African-Americans, which then morphed into discriminations against blacks. Its members actually are mostly African-Americans.
Okay, we appreciate that. That's Richard Hayden Black, former member of the Virginia State Senate, talking to us there. Thank you so much for that. Well, let's take a look at some media posts, social media posts on this. Frank Luntz writing, "My focus group's words to describe Trump tonight: controlled, reserved, poised, con artist, surprisingly presidential." And on Biden, "vague, unspecific, elusive, defensive, and grandfatherly." The last one leaves a bit of a question mark here. Okay, the next tweet comes from Ella Wild, who said, "For me, the most vile thing Trump said was good as a response to the comment that he had separated 500-plus kids and now has no idea where the parents are. Well, as a parent, this is devastating. Also, Donald blatantly ignores the question about systemic racism." Now, that we do know about Trump in terms of systemic racism, how he ignores that somewhat. But in terms of the separation, I mean, that truly is representation of Trump, separating kids from their families. Well, in the final presidential debate before Election Day, Trump and Biden were asked to relay what they would say on Inauguration Day to voters who did not support their candidacies. This is what they said.
In the end, when asked what they would say to the American voters, Trump focused his remarks on the economy and touted the low unemployment rates across a variety of demographics.
Success is going to bring us together. We are on the road to success, but I'm cutting taxes, and he wants to raise everybody's taxes, and he wants to put new regulations on everything. He will kill it. If he gets in, you will have a depression the likes of which you've never seen.
Biden, meanwhile, said he will be a president who represents all Americans, including those who did not cast their ballot for him, and said he will put science over fiction.
What is on the ballot here is the character of this country: decency, honor, respect, treating people with dignity, making sure that everyone has an even chance. And I'm going to make sure you get that. You haven't been getting it the last 4 years.
This was the last debate before the 2020 election. The U.S. President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden laid out starkly different versions of America as they met on the debate stage on Thursday night. Now it's all up to the American voters and also the electoral colleges.
All right, time for third-party candidates and independents. I told you we're going to cover them. I mean, these are voices that matter, and some are actually on the ballot, but you wouldn't know it. You, meaning Americans, and also the ones outside of the U.S. Well, we cover them here, and here's what some of them had to say on social media. Let's take a look. First, going on to Joe Jurgensen, who is the Libertarian candidate, who made a point, that is, to highlight how both candidates focused on each other's corruption based on the debate, adding, "How can you trust either with our economy, taxpayer money, or to act ethically at the White House?" She also said that voting for more government spending inevitably leads to higher taxes to pay for it, now or in the future, which she said would slash federal spending and make government much smaller. Next, Howie Hawkins from the Green Party. He proposed the Green New Deal back in 2010, saying how another decade has passed for failing to act on it, with no hopes pinned on Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Next up, Rocky De La Fuente from the Alliance Party. He said both Biden and Trump made fools of themselves, adding that Latinos and Hispanics are tired of both parties who don't include independent parties. Here's Don Blankenship, the Constitution candidate. He says here that Washington, D.C. has a spending party. Americans who pay taxes are not invited, but they're the ones who are going to pay the bill. And finally, Tweet 5 is from Brock Pierce, an independent candidate, who said the U.S. two-party system is the same side of the same coin. Real change is needed, something to emerge that transcends partisan politics. Time now for a surprise. Let me test your memory here. Do you know who this man is? Well, this is none other than world-famous Noam Chomsky, who is a U.S. linguist and philosopher. And these are his thoughts on some very important issues not covered by the candidates, and his views. Things that mainstream media don't cover, but we do on Decision 2020.
There's no coherent leadership. It's chaotic. Presidency, the White House, is in the hands of a sociopathic megalomaniac among his voting base. There are lots of people who don't like international organizations, think we're on top, we should be by ourselves, or nobody tells us anything. So it's, you know, it's good to pick up some votes from these sectors if you defund and maybe move on to disband the WHO. Of course, it has consequences. As soon as Trump came in, his first move was to dismantle the entire pandemic prevention machinery and to start defunding the Center for Disease Control, which would maybe 70% of the population, something roughly like that, that just gets by from one week to the next, one paycheck to the next paycheck. Anything goes wrong, they don't have anything. The United States doesn't have a very weak unemployment insurance as compared to other countries.
How do you like that for an ending? That does it for today. Don't forget to catch our next episode. I've been Kavit Atlee. On behalf of the whole team here, thanks. Until next time. ربنا
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Muhammad Mahmoud Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, welcome once again to yet another episode of The Bridge, a program in which we try to discuss the different supplications of Imam Zainul Abidin, supplications that have come in the form of a prayer manual known as As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyya. We have been discussing the seventh supplication of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, and that is his supplication during incidents of sorrow, painful occasions, and intense grief. We were in verse number 4, where Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam actually teaches us how to express the difficulties that we have, but in a monotheistic expression. And Imam says, you alone are called upon for affairs of difficulty, and you alone are the refuge in painful occasions. None except that which you avert is averted, and none save that which you remove is removed. So the gist of this is actually the expression of Tawheed. But what is important here is that when we say that you alone are the refuge in sorrowful occasions or painful occasions, the most important thing, brothers and sisters in Islam, is that we should develop that belief. Even if we have developed a belief through conceptual knowledge, because conceptual knowledge also reaps belief. When you have proper reasoning according to the standards of reasoning, and you come to the conclusion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's being, that Allah exists and that Allah is infinite in existence and that Allah has power over all the creation and that every moment it is He who is controlling the universe and ontologically everything is submissive to Him. These are expressions that should not be mere vocalizations and expressions. They should have reached your heart and you believe in it. And then you converse with Allah and you mean it. Oh Allah, you are the refuge in sorrowful occasions. You are the one to be called for ultimately. Even if somebody refers to other people, it is you who are actually giving the power and giving the support and so on.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
sometimes we just vocalize, sometimes we are even oblivious of what we are saying. We are told, okay, this is a supplication. If you recite this supplication, your needs will be fulfilled. You will come from the state of problems. And we recite it without even knowing the meaning because it is in Arabic. Sometimes we understand Arabic or we look at the meanings properly. And then address Allah and believe in it. That is a very different situation. Because in that situation, you have a real connection with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And that is what is important, brothers and sisters. Also, what is more important is the level that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has. And even this level or a level similar to that is open for every human being. And that is through spiritual exercises as dictated by the Sharia and by the guides of the Islamic religion. A person can attain spiritual upliftment. When a person attains spiritual upliftment, then he can vision, a time comes that he can vision the reality. And therefore when he says, Antal Mafza, you are the one who is the refuge? He sees it. There is no shak. There is no doubt that creeps in his heart. It is also not conceptualizing, because in conceptualizing or in the belief that comes from the concept, we believe in it 100% that this is the situation. But we don't see Allah through the heart. We don't actually vision the reality. But what is important, and I have been stressing this now and again, that the dua that is recited by great people like Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is quite different than the duas that we recite. Some of us don't also have belief and we recite. Some of us have belief but we don't have any proof because we have not gone through the different proof. But we do have belief. This is one of the great, we can say, ni'am and blessings of God, that we have a group of believers who have strong belief, yet they did not go through reasoning at all. They didn't go through the path of reasoning, but they are sure of all the true beliefs that a person through reasoning has come to know, and even through the vision of the heart has come to know. Such people are there because of the purity of what they've eaten from birth, because of the way they have been brought up by their parents, because of not having sinned. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives them a kind of ma'rifah, a kind of knowledge that doesn't have any kind of doubt whatsoever. So we have such people. But then it is important for those people who have not attained knowledge to attain knowledge first through reasoning and slowly and gradually to come to that level whereby they can vision the reality.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
So here, when we say antal mafza'u fil muhimmat, in terms of in circumstances of distress and in circumstances of sorrow, you are the refuge. When we say that and we vision it and believe in it, it is quite different, brothers and sisters, from just vocalization without even knowing the meaning, or even if we know the meaning, but we don't have that belief. So this is an important thing that we must realize, and this doesn't only concern this verse, it concerns all other verses. This is the second phrase that we have been stressing upon. And then Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam says, لَا يَنْدَفِعُ مِنْهَا إِلَّا مَا دَفَعْتَ. None save that which you avert is averted. Right? وَلَا يَنْكَشِفُ مِنْهَا إِلَّا مَا كَشَفْتَ. So ultimately you are saying, oh Allah, you are the one to do it. So even when you don't do it, a person at the back of his mind should also have this, that, oh Allah, do it for me because it is very difficult. But then even if you don't do it, whatever you do, you are doing good because you know what is supposed to be done. But then we have to obviously ask the relief from the problems that we have, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants us to supplicate to Him so that our supplications and our needs are fulfilled. Inshallah, we'll continue with our discussion in our next session. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين.
That was the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را یا سجاد.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Philadelphia's Legion of the Fraternal Order of Police, which supported officers involved in brutalizing protesters earlier this year, have indicated it will defend the cops who ended Walter Wallace Jr.'s life while his family watched. As of early Tuesday morning, October 27th, protesters remained out in the streets of West Philly. Police made several arrests, with the major crimes unit reportedly having been deployed. Around 12:45 a.m., police were using batons and charging tactics to encourage the remaining crowd to disperse. According to Philly journalist Jason Peters, some arrested protesters are being held at PPD's 18th precincts. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Chris Shano, writer. This article is published under the heading Protests Rise in Philly After Police Murder Black Man Amid Mental Health Crisis. Here's the details. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. West Philly saw a quickly escalating situation develop on 4 p.m. Monday afternoon, October 26th, and dragging into evening and overnight. In a graphic and disturbing video circulating on social media to white Philadelphia police, PPPD officers are seen repeatedly shooting a black man in front of his mother from several feet away as he walked while holding a knife. Neither of the two officers in the video seemed to attempt to use their taser, and they appear to have fired around 10 bullets while they were several arms' length away from the man they shot. The man struck down dead by the two PPD officers was identified as 27-year-old Walter Wallace Jr. His father, Walter Wallace Sr., told the Philadelphia Inquirer that his son was dealing with mental illness, was on medication, and his mother was trying to defuse the situation when police came and shot him. Many witnesses were present for Wallace's death and his family. Friends and neighbors quickly reacted with grief and rage to the sight of him being gunned down dead in the street. Video of the scene taken by Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Ellie Rushing shows that police had placed evidence markers indicating as many as 13 shell casings. Both of the white officers involved in the shooting death of Walter Wallace Jr. have reportedly been suspended pending an investigation. If common police practices for officer-involved shootings are being followed, they're both presumably now on paid leave. In an official city statement, Philly Mayor Jim Kenney said, "I have watched the video of this tragic incident, and it presents difficult questions that must be answered." Kenney promised a speedy and transparent resolution, but the only specific detail he offered was that the officer-involved shooting investigation unit of PPD will conduct a full investigation. Philly District Attorney Larry Krasner's statement about the shooting avoided any specifics, but also promised an investigation. Police called in reinforcements to clear the mourning neighbors from the street and reportedly dispersed the crowd at the shooting scene by 6:30 p.m., according to the Philadelphia Inquirer. Around 7 p.m. on Monday night, October 26, a crowd of several hundred protesters began to gather at Malcolm X Park. Protesters marched throughout the area, taking the streets and followed by supporting honking vehicles. They also congregated for a time outside a nearby police precinct. At some point outside the precinct, objects such as rocks and bricks reportedly began to be thrown at officers. police with riot gear and shields then pushed the crowd away from the police building, charging people through the street as trash cans and various other projectiles were pelted at them by an increasingly militant local crowd. Police appeared unable to contain the community's furious response to their having shot a black man to death in the middle of the street in the middle of the day. Crowds went on to smash into several area businesses and take commercial goods, smash and burn police vehicles, launch fireworks, and reportedly commandeer at least one construction vehicle. In one photo captured by Inquirer journalist Samantha Malamed, who was arrested by PPD while reporting on a protest in June, a police cruiser can be seen burning in front of a billboard reading, "The Power of Justice." As of early Tuesday morning, October 27th, protesters remained out in the streets of West Philly. Police made several arrests, with the major crimes unit reportedly having been deployed. Around 12:45 a.m., police were using batons and charging tactics to encourage the remaining crowd to disperse. According to Philly journalist Jason Peters, some arrested protesters are being held at PPD's 18th precinct. Philadelphia's Lodge of Fraternal Order of Police, which supported officers involved in brutalizing protesters earlier this year, has indicated it will defend the cops who ended Walter Wallace Jr.'s life while his family watched.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, how to abstain from sinning. Well, we said that sinning is something that takes away our proximity from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It becomes a hindrance between us and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Also, the acceptance of our good deeds is dependent on us abandoning sinning, because Allah accepts from the pious. And who are the pious? Those who don't sin. Now, the question, $1 million question, is how to abstain from sinning. It's something easier said than done. Right? Well, here we're going to try to help you and ourselves, inshallah, by outlining a few points that may, inshallah, help you in avoiding and abstaining from sins. Well, the first one is identify your temptations and the personal flaws that create those temptations. Right? There are those weaknesses in our soul because of which we become attracted towards our temptations. The second one is set reasonable goals for fighting temptation. You know, sometimes people overdo it, especially youth. When it comes to controlling their nafs and controlling their desires and controlling their temptations, they just go to a whole different level, which is something which is not reasonable. Nobody asked them to go that far. And then they have a recoil because it's something not easy, right? For instance, they read like the books of Urafa, and then, you know, they start to follow everything that is said in the books of those mystics. Well, this is not something desirable. Spirituality is a process. It's a stepwise process. You need to be doing the basic things first, and then you go to the higher levels and do the next things. We're going to go over some more points after we come from the break. Welcome back, dear listeners. We're discussing how to abstain from sinning. And especially youth out there, you better be attentive. We gave you 2 points. The third point is take responsibility of yourself. Take responsibility of your actions. Unfortunately, the culture, especially the culture that West has promoted, is that youth are irresponsible creatures. Well, this is not really true. If you look at the characters in Karbala, for instance, the family of Prophet and the family of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, you see, you know, the youth of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, they set the target for our youth. Moving on, the next point is turn your back on past sins. Sometimes, you know, our youth, they're trying to fix themselves, but then when they look at their sins that they have unfortunately committed in the past, they become disappointed. They think that, oh, I've already done so many sins. How can I just, you know, drop sins now and all of that goes away? Well, trust me, brothers and sisters out there. This is the system of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You do the right thing, Allah will wipe off those sins. And again, there are details of what I just said, but trust me on this. You decide to give up on sins without looking at your past history and your track record. The next one is avoid situations and people that lead to sin. Those friends, yep, you know who I'm talking about. Give up those friendships or acquaintances that put you in that situation. With that, we're going to continue this topic in the next program. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Progressive critics and election analysts have long been warning of a nightmare scenario in which Trump falsely declares himself the winner on November 3rd based on an early lead in in-person votes and proceeds to declare all votes counted after Election Day illegitimate. The president's comments recently bolstered those fears. Donald Trump is planning to everything he can to make sure your vote doesn't count. Progressive advocacy group Indivisible, part of a coalition planning mass protest should Donald Trump attempt to steal the election, said in response to the president's remarks recently, which came hours after the conservative-dominated Supreme Court ruled that the battleground state of Wisconsin cannot extend its Election Day deadline for the arrival of mail-in ballots. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jake Johnson Ryder. This article is published under the heading, "I don't believe that's by our laws," Trump says of counting all the votes in an election. Stay tuned, please, to hear more about this issue. Repeating his desire for a winner to be declared on the night of November 3rd, U.S. President Donald Trump told reporters on Tuesday, October 27th, that he doesn't believe tallying votes for weeks after Election Day is lawful, a remark observers interpreted as yet another open signal of the U.S. president's intention to challenge the counting of legally submitted ballots. "It would be very, very proper and very nice if a winner were declared on November 3rd instead of counting ballots for 2 weeks, which is totally inappropriate. And I don't believe that's by our laws," Trump said before departing the White House for a campaign rally in Lansing, Michigan. "I don't believe that, so we will see what happens." It is in fact perfectly legal for states to count ballots for weeks after the election. Some U.S. states allow mail-in ballots to arrive up to 2 weeks after November 3rd, as long as they are postmarked by Election Day. Due to the unprecedented surge in mail-in voting sparked by the pandemic, the process of tallying ballots and determining the election winner is expected to take longer than usual. "He wants to throw out legal votes. That's what he's saying here," tweeted Grant Frankruta, executive editor of GEN magazine. Progressive critics and election analysts have long been warning of a nightmare scenario in which Donald Trump falsely declares himself the winner on November 3rd based on an early lead in in-person votes and proceeds to declare all votes counted after Election Day illegitimate. The president's comments on Tuesday, October 27th, bolstered those fears. "Donald Trump is planning to do everything he can to make sure your vote doesn't count." Progressive advocacy group Indivisible, part of a coalition planning mass protests should Trump attempt to steal the election, said in response to the president's remarks recently, which came hours after the conservative-dominated U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the battleground state of Wisconsin cannot extend its Election Day deadline for the arrival of mail-in ballots. In his concurring opinion in the case, Trump nominated Justice Brett Kavanaugh parroted the U.S. president's attack on the common state practice of counting ballots that arrive after Election Day, a possible indication that Kavanaugh is, as Slate's Mark Joseph Stern put it, open to stealing the election for Trump. The implications of Kavanaugh's reason could reach beyond Wisconsin. As Stern pointed out on Twitter, "North Carolina Republicans are already citing Kavanaugh's argument to justify their own push for the Supreme Court to limit the state's absentee ballot deadline." Brett Kavanaugh's stunning opinion recently should be a huge story today, said Stern. "It cast aspersions on mail ballots. It's riddled with errors. It endorses a theory too radical for the Bush v. Gore majority. It's a preemptive attack on our election's integrity."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Iran Today.
The stumps you see for hands are cause of flaky skin growing over what were once hands. The best one could do for the afflicted was to provide comfort, and now even that has been ripped away by secondary U.S. sanctions. Sanctions imposed on foreign non-U.S. entities for dealing with Iran.
Actually, how are Iran's pharmaceutical market and industry impacted by sanctions? International economic sanctions, that is, that have been reimposed unilaterally by the U.S. alone. The U.S. claims sanctions have no impact on food and drugs availability. But to test the truth of that statement, all you have to do is take a glance at children with leukemia, butterfly children, and so many others afflicted by rare diseases or in need of specialized drugs. Drugs they cannot access or afford the way the economy is going. After all, sanctions do help increase inflation and decrease people's purchasing power. I'm Leila Faramarzi.
Iran produces 97% of the medicines its inhabitants consume. This does not defy my earlier claim, however. I was talking of specialized medicine and treatment often for severe conditions of small populations. Populations so small that it is not economical for every one country to produce their required medication. Besides, a third of the medications produced in Iran are actually dependent on imported materials and imported medicine. Mr. Hashemi Golpayegani is executive director of EB Home. EB stands for Epidermolysis Bullosa.
The U.S. claims that food and medications are not subject to sanctions. As the father of an EB patient, as well as 750 other EB patients, I can tell you that it is not so in practice. I am feeling the sanctions. I am feeling the sanctions, for example, in dressing here for EB patients. From May 2017 to May 2018, 15 of our patients died due to the non-availability of dressing.
Dr. Golpayegani has suffered from the condition firsthand. He has a daughter with EB, but has put his suffering into helping so many more. and that is an individual choice. It has nothing to do with his being a cleric. At the best of times, no one country alone can alleviate all its pharmaceutical and medical problems. It's just not economical. And now a pandemic has hit the world, so it's going to take all the countries of the world to cooperate to get rid of that problem. If all those decades ago, developing countries created the non-aligned movement, now it's time for developed countries to create an aligned movement to get rid of the pandemic. I'm going to bring you face to face with the man who proposed this to me, here at Tehran's Hemophilia Center. Referring to US claims of having not placed sanctions on food and drugs, do tell me of your own experience.
I've been thinking of this for months now. We have to trigger a global movement under the name of the Aligned Movement. In reaction to Trump-led U.S. actions across the world, the UN Security Council is required to launch a global movement. The so-called advocates of human rights, including European nations, should now come and launch a movement. Last time, developing nations launched the Non-Aligned Movement, spearheaded by the Indians. It's now the Europeans' turn to take action. What do we mean by the aligned movement? We mean a movement to be aligned with international ideals and achievements. At the top of them stands the right to health, which is the most basic right of mankind.
Mr. Qavidel, chief of the Hemophilia Center, places a lot of importance on people action, in speaking up for those suffering in silence from sanctions, and also in fighting a certain pandemic. Regarding the latter, Iran's state of affairs with the pandemic is not just to do with sanctions, he says. It also has to do with hurried action in domestic policy making.
At the forefront of the fight on the coronavirus are people. The strategic mistake was that everyone imagined health professionals would be on the front line. The health professionals lie on the front line in sacrificing, but in tackling crisis, this is people who are on the front line. People must contain the coronavirus. They're on the front line under guidance of health experts. The second in line are media in informing people on the health experts' guidance. The third are trustees who would lead people because mistrust poses a challenge in such cases. The fourth in line are hospitals.
Iran condemns the U.S. for its unjustified sanctions, which would no doubt be deemed illegal if intention and outcome matter. But it also sees sanctions as a godsend to steer the country away from oil dependency and toward further independence from other countries. What sounds like a contradiction does have an explanation. That is more than can be said for the U.S.'s claim that food and drugs are exempt from sanctions. Do you have any idea of how to both withstand U.S. sanctions and alleviate Iran's pharmaceutical problems?
A country targeting food and medications with sanctions has committed a war crime. Such a country is definitely targeting people's lives. The U.S. is trying to clear itself of such charges, claiming that food and medications are not subject to sanctions. Okay, they are not sanctioned, but how can transactions be done for purchasing drugs? We are talking about a country with daily dependence on such medications, with patients who have to use such medications every morning.
I'll demonstrate in a bit how sanctions do include food and drugs by example. The current U.S. President Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal on 8th May 2018. This meant economic nuclear-related U.N. sanctions that were lifted due to the deal were now reimposed on Iran as U.S. sanctions. This was followed by a stream of withdrawals. One by one, foreign companies started withdrawing their deals to export medicine, medical equipment, and raw materials to Iran. There's more to be said, but after taking a look at what other media outlets have to say, for that, I give you Shahrzad.
Hi, my name is Shahrzad Manjari, and we'll be reviewing the latest update on Iran's medicinal needs in the face of U.S. sanctions. In an article by Tehran Times, we witness how Iranians tell stories of resistance against sanctions. As the United States ramps up economic sanctions on Iran, Iranians from all walks of life take to Twitter and other social media platforms to turn the spotlight on how the U.S. sanctions have negatively affected countless patients in Iran whose access to medicines were hampered by these sanctions. The 4-year-old daughter of one of my former PhD students is dying of cancer, and there is a shortage of medicine. Because of the illegal U.S. regime sanctions and economic warfare, her medicine has also become prohibitively expensive. May the U.S. empire, along with its enablers, rot and burn, tweeted Sayed Mohammad Marandi, a professor of English literature and Orientalism at the University of Tehran. Katayun Lamizadeh, a journalist, tweeted, "My young first cousin passed away last week because of cancer. She needed special medications that doctors said weren't available. Had she taken it, she would have been next to her little daughter right now, not in a grave." Another Twitter user, who is a pharmacist, has enumerated many medicines that the U.S. sanctions prevented them from entering Iran. USA sanctions on Iran are resulting in lack of the most basic medical supplies, such as Plavix 75, Telfast 120-180, Cetirizine Hexal 5100, Detrusitol 2, Deferlines 3.75, reusable insulin pens, Mesitone 60, etc., tweeted Mahjonia. Experts believe that these stories clearly show that the U.S. sanctions are illegal under international humanitarian law. Al-Monitor reports Ayatollah Khamenei states Iran must look inward to address economy. Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the country would never retreat in the face of new sanctions. During a video speech delivered to a military university, Ayatollah Khamenei addressed the new U.S. sanctions and the maximum pressure strategy, saying, "We will not ignore the role of the malicious Americans and their sanctions on the economy, which are certainly criminal." He added that Iran will make them regret their maximum pressure. In response to U.S. President Donald Trump boasting about the damage U.S. sanctions have done to Iran's economy, Ayatollah Khamenei said taking pride in such crimes can only come from such a scoundrel as yourself. He continued saying that sanctions would be an avenue to create real economic resistance. That's all for this segment.
On May the 18th, 2018, that's 10 days after the U.S. pullout, Roquette, a French producer of starch for medical uses, said it had decided to cease all trade and sales with Iran. It noted, "This decision is as a result of the recent announcement by the United States of America, which, if ignored by us, is expected to adversely affect our U.S. operations." In just about a month, in June 2018, the Italians and Germans came up with the same.
The first and basic expectation was the modification of sanctions on Iran at a time a pandemic is targeting not just a nation, but rather the entire mankind. The US even toughened the sanctions while the Europeans stood and just watched. France and Britain take pride in defending human rights. How could they remain silent vis-a-vis the sanctions imposed on a nation at a time of a pandemic? This pandemic requires international unity.
The Italian pharmaceutical company Recordati wrote, "We are very sorry to inform you that as a result of recent and severe restrictions on the operations with your country, we will be unable to continue the business of our products from the 1st of August 2018. And how the German branch of JRS Pharma put it was, "Due to political circumstances out of our control, our banks can no longer accept any payments linked to Iran businesses." Next, in August of the same year, Gentige, a Swedish manufacturer of hospital equipment, said, "Due to extended sanctions against the Republic of Iran, we have been informed by our compliance department that we are not allowed to engage in any kind of business with Iranian-based customers." The above were just a handful of examples dotted all over the globe by companies fearful of U.S. retribution. They didn't mince their words, and the timeline speaks for itself. U.S. sanctions, both direct and secondary, equal both an economic and medical war on Iran. Let's call it siege warfare. Interestingly, the U.S. has admitted to its guilt by contradicting itself time and again. Here's what U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told CBS News on February the 14th, 2019. Things are much worse for the Iranian people with the U.S. sanctions, and we are convinced that will lead the Iranian people to rise up and change the behavior of the regime.
The U.S. is reversing its position on its causes of honor. The U.S. took pride in having rejected racism, but under Trump, racism was approved of. Trump has cut budget allocation to all international organizations.